Roberta Blevins, and this is Life After MLM, a podcast where we worked in the stigma of failure in an industry systemically designed for you to fail. Join us as we dive into the real life stories of survivors, experts, and advocates as we debunk the common myths and fallacies of cults, frauds, scams, and multi-level marketing. Hey, Hunbots and Hunbros. I hope you enjoyed part one of our conversation with Mark and Claire Headley. And without further ado, here's part two.
I was posting on there every day, and I was telling all these stories that were happening at the international base. And so it became a thing where, oh, there's a going to be a new posting this week. Everyone's waiting to see what this posting is going to be. And then I started posting on another message board called the Ex-Scientologist message board. And that was another forum that was very similar, just a newer version of the same thing. And a lot of the same people would post on it. And it's the same thing. You get the shit stirs in there. You got the people that work there. You got the people that don't know anything, and they're telling you all their opinions because they know better than anybody, and because they weren't in Scientology. So obviously they know better. And so, you know, all those kind of people were in there.
So not everything's changed.
Yeah.
I was going to say, are you sure you're not talking about anti-MLM?
I'm telling you, these things have been going on for decades. But the best part is that Scientology spy wing is called the Office of Special Affairs. A lot of the members of these message boards were Office of Special Affairs accounts and people that they had paid, or that Scientologists that were volunteering to shut down the internet, all the Scientology nonsense on the internet. So you have people like Tori Chrisman, who used to be one of those people, and then she became a main contributor to these message boards. And so a lot of these people were OSA turned whistleblower that were in there. So they knew the game as well. Everybody in the game knew the way the game was being played. And so when you saw somebody shit stirring, you were like, okay, that's OSA. It was a very kind of clear, we all kind of played our parts and OSA was in there. And some of us knew it was OSA. Some of people would play. But when Anonymous became a thing, I want to say, was that 2008?
Yes.
2009?
2008, I think.
In the late 2000s, when Anonymous, that there was a video, and this is a crazy thing, because there was a video, that turtleneck video of Tom Cruise was up on the internet. And the person who had put it up was Mark. I think it was originally, it was Mark Bunker, the Mark Bunker that we know today. He's the one who put that video up on the internet. I'm pretty sure that's how it went.
Yeah. I don't remember. Cause also around the time Mark Bunker did put up the video with Jason Begay, was another significant one. Yeah.
But also there was a video that I had about that was a Tom Cruise birthday party that I had also put up. And then there was another gentleman by the name of Mark Ebner. He was the one who consulted for the South Park episode. Anyway, so
lots of marks.
There was three marks involved for working with South Park and releasing two Tom Cruise videos. And we were all getting mixed up by Scientology and in the message boards because, oh, Mark put this video out, or Mark put this video up, or Mark is the one who did the South Park. So it was very confusing on which Marks were doing what stuff. And I want to say that Mark Bunker, or whoever posted the original Tom Cruise turtleneck video, for some reason took it down. The person who posted the video took the video down. When that happened, everyone thought Scientology took it down and had got the, they contacted YouTube or whatever, and they told them, you got to take this down. And that's why it went down. So Anonymous freaked out and said, oh, we're coming after you. You can't, you don't control the internet.
You can't censor the internet. How dare all your you? Base,
oh. All your bases belong to us, blah, 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 blah. And
all your base are belong to us, Mark.
Okay,
sorry.
All your base are belong to us.
And this also intersects with my life when I was living in LA, because I had a friend, still a friend,
yeah,
recently connected, who was in Anonymous and would wear masks and hold signs outside the Celebrity Center in Los Angeles in Hollywood.
Nice.
Wow.
And I was friends with this person. And I remember the Tom Cruise birthday video when you were, my face was like, ah!
small world.
Yeah, so many synapses are like, bzz, 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 things are connecting.
Yeah. And so that time was amazing fun. There was a lot of fun that happened because it was amazing. You have these kids show up to these protests with ghetto blasters, and then they just start dancing outside the organization. People are dressed up as Xenu. We're all wearing Guy Fawkes masks. It was a lot of fun. But at the same time, Scientology was losing their minds. And that is when the hate sites started coming and the private investigators.
Yeah, at that time, they were calling Mark and I Mr. and Mrs. Anonymous. That was their cracker liquor version from 2008 was... And we're like, wait a minute, we're not anonymous. Like, of all these people, you have always known who we are. How can we be Mr. and Mrs. Anonymous? That's not how this works.
That's such a misnomer.
Yes.
Also, Roberta, don't worry. I do have a Mark cracker licking GIF that I can send you later.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. That was the craziest thing is they had all these pictures. We filed a lawsuit against Scientology. And also they put up these hate sites. They have pictures of me at the protests with a mask on. It's obviously me. Anybody who's seen me goes, yeah, that checks out. That's you. And I'm leaning up against my car in the picture. So it's like, well, yeah, I was playing along. And also in that time, I was kind of well known because I'm posting all these things. And Anonymous were, my book at that time was required reading for Anonymous, that you're going to protest Scientology and you want to know some stuff. There wasn't 30 books out about it like there is now. So when I went to the protest, I was just trying to fly below the radar with the protesters, not with Scientology. They were already up in my business full time.
Wow.
What do I care if they know I'm also doing this, you know?
Well, you know what? Because we kind of talked about the Aftermath show and the after effects of you speaking out. The episode that I watched, that I talk about, I think, in Lula Rich, of saying I was watching Leah Remini's show, the way that I was able to even connect with Mike and Leah and go on their show and all this stuff. The episode that I watched of the Scientology Aftermath show was a reunion show. And it was you that was talking, Claire.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, my God, I'm in a cult. And it was your story at that moment that was like, oh, God, because I don't even remember what it was. But I just remember the name Claire Headley. I was like, Claire Headley. Oh. And it was just something like, and I had remembered Mark from the past and all these things. It's just so strange to me because I was so interested in Scientology. I was friends with Jenna. I grew up with Dallas, like all of these weird connections in my life. And then to like be sitting here with you guys right now, having these conversations, you referencing videos that I was like, oh my God, I totally forgot about that. Like it's so, so full circle. So
completely.
The fact that you even spoke out gave the strength to Leah to speak out, to start a show where you came and spoke out more, which connected with me. And then I spoke out and then Michelle found me and Michelle spoke out. Like all of us are part of that first initial ripple effect.
Wow.
And it's just wild to think about.
It is.
Yeah. And to me, if somebody said, do you have any regrets or would you do it? I say, if we could have helped one single person, then it would have been worth it. Just one person. The fact that we have people like you saying this or people writing us or, you know, we can't get back all that time. And the weird thing is I feel if someone else left and they didn't tell me or try to tell me what happened, I would be like, dude, what the hell?
I know. I feel the same way.
Why didn't you tell me? Like, you knew me. We were friends. When we were there, we were friends. I wasn't mean to you. You weren't mean to me. We were friends. Why wouldn't you try to help me? Or why wouldn't you tell my parents or tell my, you know, like, why wouldn't you sound the alarm? And so to me, there are, I know hundreds of people who've left. They've never said a thing. And I'm told that's their choice. Yeah. I get it. You know, also, we're volunteering to do this nonsense and volunteering to get all of the good and the bad that comes with it.
Yeah.
We're not being paid to do it. We're doing it because we feel it's the right thing to do. So yeah. When it works and somebody like you says that, that's,
it's amazing. You know,
that is the reason.
Thank you that, for sharing
that. That rekindles that spark, that flame. But then when you have the nonsense from Scientology and the nonsense from just people who are just unaware of the history and unaware of all the, there is easily 100 different people right now that whatever we're doing here may or may not directly affect the outcome of whatever they're doing in their life. It could go good for them. It could go bad for them. And then now it's sort of like, God, this is really rough. It's getting to the point where you're just like, we have to keep doing this and we're just going to have to just
suck it up.
Just if there's shrapnel, yeah. There's shrapnel. You just got to suck it up. That's all. Yeah. That's all you can do.
I resonate with that.
Stay true to the cause. Eye on the goal. Yeah. Keep getting people out. That's all that matters at the end of the day. And we know what our goal is. And we know that if I were still in, yes, I would want Mark to still hold out hope that I might someday get out. And thank God he doesn't have to do that. But, you know, it's tough. And yeah, this is the best thing that we can do because we do have a lot of experience. We do know what it's like to have to start over. We've walked that walk. Do we know everything? Absolutely not. But it's amazing to me that in today's age, the community that has sprung up around supporting and exposing and just educating the world, you know, young people, us old people, you know, everybody, we're all united. I would say easily there's more people in this community than there are Scientologists. So we are doing the work.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Really, that is, at the end of the day, there are more people that are trying to help people get out of Scientology than there are people that want to stay in or get new people in. So that's kind of, and I suspect it's very similar with what you're doing. There's all these groups out there that are preying on people, and we know they are. It's not a conspiracy theory. We know it's happening. We have proof. There's lawsuits. There's people that are living like millionaires and they're taking all these people money. And so it's sort of like, as long as people are still falling prey to them, we're going to keep doing it.
Yep.
Because at a certain point, you're going to get to somebody like, what do you mean you're going to join Scientology? Like it's going to become that sort of thing. Like, have you not like turned on a computer for the last 20 years? Like, that's craziness.
That really, really reminds me of a point I kind of wanted to make earlier, and we don't have to like go into it or anything, but I think I asked this on maybe one of Claire, your lives with Amy or something. I know I asked one of you guys and not the other one, but I can't help but think that the downfall of Scientology, like really at its core, is going to come down to the fact that L. Ron Hubbard didn't factor in the internet and Scientology won't change anything from what he said, right?
Completely. 100%.
Like the internet is, it's over.
Yes.
Yeah. The internet is Scientology's kryptonite because communication, of all things, that is the kind of the wildest thing. When you're in Scientology, the biggest thing they push is communication. L. Ron Hubbard said communication is the universal solvent and that communication can solve anything. It's kind of ironic that in Scientology, you're not allowed to communicate about a ton of things that happen inside Scientology. So the fact that people can readily communicate with each other and say, they silo everything in Scientology. Every individual Scientologist is siloed. They're not allowed. You can't talk about anything with your spouse, with your kids, with anybody. So when a kid or a mom or a sister or a brother that's in Scientology can just go on YouTube and find out all the questions that Scientology won't answer, it inoculates them to a point where they know, these guys are just trying to get my money. These guys are just trying to get my parents or trying to get this or And so you're right. The internet facilitates that. And even now, the internet is morphing into all different ways to do that even better.
And I feel like the internet also provides such a great opportunity for Scientology to combat that, but they won't because L. Ron Hubbard didn't ever talk about the internet.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the problem they have is that L. Ron Hubbard said, never defend, never defend.
Always attack.
Always attack.
Right.
So when you think, when you do have a person that's a whistleblower and then they start attacking them, and the whistleblower says, hey, if you speak out about Scientology, you're going to get attacked. And then Scientology does that exact thing. And it's very obvious to one and all. Then you go like, well, he's telling the truth. Because L. Ron Hubbard said, always attack, never defend. So
exactly. That's
the other thing. When you know, like I was saying earlier, if you know, like, well, are we even making any difference? Is it even worth it? Like, why even bother doing this? And then you hear somebody writes to us and says, thank you. I read your book. My whole family got out. We all left. We got out successfully because we kind of planned it and we pre-gamed it. And you go like, okay, keep doing it. It's worth it. But then when you find out that Scientology is losing their minds and doing all the things that they do, you go, okay, it's working, because they're losing people. They're on that end going, how do we stop this? And now it's better for us that there are hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of people, because that spreads OSA a little thinner and they don't have so much to
disrupt. Strength in numbers. Strength in numbers.
We're getting off easy with Google ads right now. That's sort of, I mean, every once in a while a PI thing happens or trash. Or
you
whatever,
know, they send nasty letters to all of our clients or tag our entire town on Twitter saying that I'm no different than someone else who's in jail. I mean, holy moly. True story. You can't make this up. That's them for you. And so it is, but it's amazing. And it is, I think, encouraging for even MLM, you know, Scientology, like the education of and understanding the signs and understanding the control and the mechanisms and how they get you. You know, I don't know about you, but I've always been motivated to tell my story because so many times people have asked, oh, you seem like a really normal person. Like, how did you stay in that for so long? I'm like, well, about that, you know, in the hospital when I was born, they didn't really have an interview room where they said, well, do you want to be in a cult?
I think that it's beautiful to have this like opportunity in this internet connected world where in theory, we could all stop talking about our experiences tomorrow publicly. And our stories that we've already shared are going to continue to combat that information control for the rest of the internet, for the rest of time, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think that's so incredible. Totally. And why I also don't, I would never like judge anyone for not wanting to, you know, dedicate their time to this. This is such a hyperfixation.
It is.
Yeah, it is a lot. Even we get into these periods where, like, I have a full-time job. Claire has a full-time job. We've got three kids,
you know,
two dogs, two cats, a Western striped salamander. You know, we got a whole thing going. And then people are like, why haven't you done a video? And you're like, dude, I have my livelihood has to happen. And I do this after dinner. This is my after dinner activity. So,
and don't forget, that's after our volunteer jobs of helping get people out, which, you know, we'll take calls any time of the day or night for that. Drop everything to take a phone call. You know, it just is what it is. It's, you know, we're only human.
Yeah. So right. Sometimes we get caught up in our lives and then it's sort of like, hey, where are you? Why didn't you do this? Or why? And you're just like, I was in Boston, you know, like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what's happening, but it's like, we're trying to be that normal person that then people go, you know, you seem normal. That's why I listened to you. And that's how I found out about this. And so it's sort of like, we're trying to do it all. And that's the other great thing about the internet. If there's 100 of us talking about it, there's a much greater chance that one of us is going to resonate with that person that needs to be resonated with. So
absolutely,
it's not to me. I'm like, join the club. Like,
if you want to, and if not, then don't, because it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
But a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it's super fulfilling.
Yes. I mean, it's the same. It's the same with anti-MLM. we have so many different people that speak out on so many different platforms in so many different ways. Some people make YouTube videos, some people make TikTok, some people just do Instagram infographics, and there are so many different personalities. Some people focus on specific companies. Some people focus on specific actions that are happening or whatever. And I always tell people, I'm like, if you don't like me, that's fine. There are so many other people that you can connect with. I just want you to connect with what we're saying so that you can understand the fundamentals of what's going on. So that when you see it, not only in MLM, but maybe you see it in Scientology or you see it in another church or you see it in a relationship, you're like, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
That reminds me of this. That's a red flag too. Yes.
Totally.
And being able to talk about that. Because I think so many people, when I say Scientology, they're like, that's a cult. Mm-hmm. But when I say MLM, they're like, oh, I did Avon. And I was like, that's a cult. Yeah. That's also a cult. And I think the more that we do Scientology episodes where we talk about these heinous things and I go, oh my God, like I'm triggered because that reminds me of this in my MLM, the more that we can tell stories that are different but the same, mm-hmm. those red flags pop out so much more.
Totally.
And you're like, oh my God, that's gaslighting.
Well, that actually reminds me, Roberta, of something I wanted to say earlier, that you actually experienced your own kind of like fair game when Lou the Rich came out. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Because didn't they like get your TikTok shut down that week or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all just the same.
Yeah. We had this whole plan to do like a TikTok or a Twitter live watch party. And I was going to do it on my computer while we watched it all together. And then I was going to be live on TikTok too, just live. So people could come in and say hi. And it was just like,
did you announce this ahead of time?
Yes, of course I did. Cause I'm dumb as hell.
Yeah. Okay, good.
And oh, I perfect. Got my TikTok like 12 hours before.
I'm just following along so I can compare notes to what Scientology
12
does.
12 hours before the watch party, like I get a notification that my TikTok is banned for 7 days for like illegal yeah. goods and services and like, and bullying or something. I was like, what? Yeah, I know. I was like, I shouldn't have piped it up.
Lesson learned.
Yeah, same thing.
Oh my gosh.
When we were first yeah. starting the Aftermath Foundation, we had like a meet and greet in Clearwater.
Oh no.
And we're like, hey, everybody's going to support the Aftermath. We're going to go to Clearwater. We're going to hang out downtown. We're going to go eat, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da. We couldn't get into any restaurant in Clearwater, right? Scientology had gone to every single restaurant and said, if these guys come in here and you let them eat, you're done. And so every place we went into was like, oh, we're sorry. We're all booked. And you're like, oh, there's 27 empty tables here. What are you talking about?
Private party coming in.
I'm sorry. We're not allowed to serve yes. you. And we're just like... good thing we announced it, you know, so even me, this is a silly thing. When I travel somewhere, I post the pictures when I get home.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to go to Boston, I'm going to tell everybody, see you, Boston. When I'm sitting in my living room at Castle Rock, I've got a picture of me at the airport in Boston, you know, or whatever that, you know, but it's, yeah. that's the kind of, you know, people are like, oh, you're just a normal person. Yeah, no. It's people who memorizes license plates is not a normal fucking person, okay?
We had our will drafted when we were 32 because of Mark's book release, Blown for Good, Behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology. And I was just like, I'm going to make sure, no matter what, that our children are safe. You know, it's just, it's not normal. Absolutely not. But it's the life we've lived. So it's who we are.
I mean, like just anybody listening, just put yourself in the shoes where you're like, my husband, who I'm super proud of, is going to release his whistleblowing book about the cult we were all in. Better update our will just in case. I mean, right. that's yep. wild.
Make sure that we have a clause in there so that if anything happens to us, our children never end up in Scientology's clutches. It's a real concern. Wow.
Because they would try, because you still have family in.
Right.
Yeah, when we were in the middle of the lawsuit with Scientology, our lawyer's lug nuts were removed from the tires on his car when he was pulling out of his driveway. He saw a guy running off and he just happened to check. And the lug nuts weren't on the wheels. Like they were loosened on the wheels of his car.
Do you ever wonder how much of your personal data is out there on the internet just for anyone to find? I promise it's more than you think. Your name, contact info, social security number, home address, even information about your family members. It's all being compiled by data brokers and openly sold online. This can lead to a lot of problems, including identity theft, phishing attempts, harassment, and unwanted spam calls. But now you can protect your privacy with Delete Me. Signing up for the service is super easy. Just provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. They send you regular, personalized privacy reports showing what info they found, where they found it, and what they removed. I got my report, and I was floored with the results. Of the 105 data brokers they checked, 83 of them had my data. Delete Me then removed 173 listings of my personal data off the internet, and they make sure that it stays off too. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me at a special discount just for our listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and use promo code MLM at checkout. The only way to get the 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and enter code MLM at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/MLM, code MLM.
Like, that's the kind of, like, people are like, oh, yeah, you know, it's like, no, that was a Tuesday, okay? Like, that's another weird part about this is that we're trying to encourage other people to speak out, okay? And we're trying to talk about the things that happened and the things that happen. But if I'm talking about lug nuts getting loosened on your car, maybe somebody goes, I'm good. I know a lot of stuff, but I ain't up for lug nuts. That's not for me.
But it's also so important that people know that before they do decide to speak out, because I feel like that's also a really big thing that I've seen in anti-MLM and in ex-cult communities is people who maybe come out to tell their stories and make connections with others before they're healed enough to do so, or before they've processed what even happened to them, or, you know, have any idea of what's in store for them should they, you know, go forward with that. So I think one something that Roberta definitely has always tried to do is not bring on, you know, guests who are like objectively not ready to have their stories shared.
Right.
You know, and sometimes that turns into them coming on a few months later. Right. Sometimes not at all, but it's something that the Aftermath Foundation, you know, maybe that can be incorporated as how to deal with social media. Do you have anything like that with your programs, or is it all just life skills and stuff?
We don't currently, but you make a really good point, because it is a transition, and it is, you know, there's just so many elements that come with it of, you know, who can you trust? What to expect? Mm. You know, all of these things are very real issues.
Trauma drama is a real thing, and hurt people is a real thing. So that's another reason why we don't require that anybody that we help, we don't require that they ever go public about anything, because to us, I mean, we left January 2005. It was when I went to Germany. I went to Germany to speak to a European council of like law enforcement and their governments. And at that conference, I got up at the podium and I said, my name is Mark Headley. I worked at the International Headquarters of Scientology. Some of you may know me as Blown for Good. That was the first time that I ever went public. That was years after I escaped from Scientology. It wasn't months, it wasn't weeks. Even though I was doing stuff and I was active, when I went up on that stage and did that, it was like, okay, I'm ready now to do this. And so I know that that might take 10 years for somebody. It might take 10 weeks, it might take 10 days, but they have to be in a space where they're healed. If you're trying to heal and do the thing at the same time, that's not a good space to be in, because you're still vulnerable and you're still going to get triggered, or this is going to bring you back, or whatever the trauma drama is. It's going to, if you've got it, we're going to know about it pretty quickly, because it's just how, that's just how this, that I think it was John Atack, another ex Scientology whistleblower. And he's been doing it for, I want to say 30 years now.
He's an OG. He's buddies with Hoyt. I think they have a podcast together.
Yeah, we just did.
With who?
Hoyt Richards.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Point Richards.
But he said that there's a study that was done. He does focus a lot about on the mental health aspect of it and like the mechanics of the hypnotism and the brainwashing and all the aspects of how it, of the trap of Scientology, how you get rewired. But there's some article or study that said Scientology is 10 times worse than next level of cult that does this kind of indoctrination and hypnotism and brainwashing. Scientology is 10 times worse than like the next worst one or something like that. It could take 10 times longer to decompress or to come back from that. So yeah, it's a very, and this is the crazy thing. There's always been like the people that are fanatic Scientologists, but they don't like the organization. They still believe Hubbard, but they don't believe David Miscavige. Or they think Hubbard had it wrong, but David Miscavige has got it. So you have all these different kind of people with all these different views and backgrounds. And so it's crazy. It's a crazy world to kind of negotiate in when you're trying to, you know, spread the word.
Yeah. For sure.
I mean, I'm still stuck on loosening the lug nuts on your car. I mean, that's like super villain curly mustache behavior.
Yep, completely.
Do you know what I mean?
When I went to the grocery store one time, there was a guy, I saw him in the grocery store. Like I saw him. I was like, dude, what the hell? He was following me. I'm like, dude, I get here. Cinnamon Toast Crunch. That's what I'm getting.
And he had been at Fry's Electronics before that. That was the other thing. Right. We saw him at Fry's Electronics. Then you went to the grocery store. Yeah.
That's right. And then I see him at the grocery store and I'm just like, you got to be kidding me. Anyway, as soon as he sees that I've seen him for the second time today, because even at Fry's, I was like, dude, I know who you are. Your picture's on the internet. You work for Scientology. I know you. And then I see him at the grocery store and I'm just like, again? And then when I got in the car to drive out of the grocery store, he was laying behind my car in the fetal position.
And it was nighttime.
And I had a backup camera. So as soon as...
Oh, like you're going to run him over.
Yeah, run over the Scientology guy. Anyway, so as soon as I put it into reverse, it goes beep. You know, it says there's something in the way. And I look at the camera, I'm like, there's a dude back there. So I put it right back into park and I get out and I go, really? How much do they pay you? You're willing to get run over by me? Like, you know, I'm kind of a fast driver. You know, if I'm not always paying the best attention when I back up, you know, like.
Thank goodness for the backup camera. Holy moly.
But that's the kind of thing you're like, do I live in the upside down? What kind of craziness is going on right now?
I was just thinking this sounds like it should be an HBO series or something.
Yeah, it's just
right.
Like.
Yeah. I just imagine like. Mark putting it in reverse, seeing the guy rolled up in a ball behind his car, putting it in park, getting out, rolling the guy away from his car, getting back in his car and driving away. It's like, just roll this guy away. Annoying. Like, ridiculous.
It's so crazy. Another crazy thing is that same private investigator, we were doing a show for an Australian TV show, and we were driving up and down Sunset filming. They're filming me just driving up down Sunset. They said, do you think a PI will follow us? I said, oh, if we load up with cameras and all this, there will be a private investigator. There was, and it was that dude. And they got him on camera almost running over the film crew while we were shooting. They filmed him almost running over the film crew because he was trying to get away. Because I said, oh, we're literally driving down Sunset. I'm like, oh, there's a car following us already. And they're like, what? We've been literally for 1 minute. I'm like, yeah, it's black Ford F-150, license plate 081712. And they're like, no way. I'm like, okay, watch this. I start turning on all these different sites and the guy follows us everywhere. And I'm like, there you go. And then when I saw the footage of the show, when it aired on TV, I was like, oh, that's a supermarket parking lot guy. It's the same dude. Even the film crew, they literally thought I was nuts. They're like, we're going to leave a hotel and there's going to be a private investigator following us. Like, this guy's so nuts. And when we got back to the hotel and this all happened, they started getting freaky. And I go like, oh, you guys, now you believe me. I've been telling you all these things. You didn't believe me. Now you've seen it. Now you know it's real. And I'm like, I hope you guys weren't leaving your phones in your rooms. And they're like, what? And I'm like, oh, you left your phones in your rooms? Oh, those phones have all been cloned while we've been doing this interview. Because we were shooting in a hotel. We were shooting the interview in a hotel. And they just had other rooms in the hotel. They stopped the recording of the interview and went and got their phones from their rooms. Like, I was like, yeah, you guys, I've been doing this. I've been doing this since 2006. I know how to play this game. These guys will do anything to get info. Yeah.
Okay. Really quick, because Claire has to go, I wanted to ask you about your new book, and you can just pitch it really quick, and then we'll finish the episode with your lovely husband.
Awesome. That's amazing. Yes, I'm finally working on my book, title to be released, but it's just covering my whole 30 years in Scientology, particularly with a focus on exposing what it is for a child to be born in a cult and grow up in a cult, and what it took me to get out. And Mark is the straw that broke the camel's back for me. The day he escaped, it was my wake-up moment of, what am I doing here? My life is miserable. Up until that moment, I had never once imagined that I could possibly break free of that because of my first 30 years. So anyway, that's my goal.
Wow. Yay.
Well, that's incredible. And when your book comes out, we'll have to have you back.
Yes.
And you can tell us all about it and share with us your journey.
That would be amazing. Thank you so much.
Go be a mom and have a life.
Yes.
Claire, go get
and
those
thank
kids.
You so much, Claire. This was lovely.
This has been an amazing conversation. I've learned so much. And seeing the parallels is, you know, like you said, the synapses and everything, the connection that comes from that is a beautiful thing. So thank you for everything that you do as well.
Thank you.
And thank you for sharing the impact we had. And I'm just so grateful our paths crossed.
Absolutely. I feel the exact thank same you. Way. Bye, Claire. All right, Mark. We got you here now.
Oh, yeah. Now we're going to get down to the crazy.
Now Claire's not here.
Okay, you can tell us
the
truth.
Well, I think this is such an incredible, like, you are just such an incredible inspiration for the work that you've done the past 20 years, exposing this, getting out, sharing your stories with your YouTube channel, with your book, which I have not read yet. I'm going to have to read your book.
I have.
We'll send you a copy. We'll send you a Hail Z new thing and a copy.
Oh my God, I would love that. That would be so amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can listen to it on my Audible account if you don't want to wait.
Oh yeah, I can listen
which
to
she
it
has.
I like to listen and read along because I learned that in high school and college, you know?
People do say they love to get the hard copy because then they want to listen to the Audible and just kind of follow along. And I thought, really? And they're like, oh yeah, I do that all the time. And then a lot of people just say that they just like to listen in the car, you know, on their commute or whatever. They like to listen to podcasts or audiobooks. So,
but my neurodivergent brain, if I'm not like, I can multitask, but you know, I'm half-assing two things.
Yes.
I'd rather whole-ass one thing. So if I can listen to it and read it at the same time, my brain is like multitasking, but it's not really multitasking. And then I actually absorb it a lot better because I'm not only hearing it, but I'm feeling it. And I like know at which point of the book I'm at. So if I have to come back, I'm like, oh, it was like in the first third. I have a strange and cool brain. So,
well, then I think we should send you, we might have to send you a hardback and a paperback, but the paperback has a map of the international headquarters that has every single building named and everything.
That's great.
Because a lot of the book let's say 80% of it takes place at the international headquarters of Scientology. And it's a 550 acre property. And there's hundreds of buildings and places and
the whole, and
the manufacturing building and all these different things. So the fact that there's a map, people loved when the paperback came out and they're like, oh my God, there's a map.
I haven't seen that.
And it was like a big deal that there was a map of this place. But there is also a glossary because there's a lot of terminology in Scientology. And so we had to make a glossary to kind of explain some of the Scientologies just so you had like a little cheat sheet you could go to. Because also they abbreviate.
Everything's an acronym. Like, I don't know what this means.
Yeah, everything. And you don't realize it when you're in Scientology because you're writing shorthand. Everything is shorthand because you're using all these abbreviations. So then when you go to write a book about Scientology, you're like, oh, I got to change the names of these things. Otherwise, this book's going to be twice as long just explaining all the acronyms. And so early on, there's this whole thing that happened when I first got into the Sea Org where I set up the, you know, acronym, just paragraphs of acronyms that a normal person would be like, I have no idea what just happened. This guy's writing a bunch of words, but I don't know what's going on. So I had to kind of set you up for that in the beginning of the book, like, oh, this is going to be rough. You got to kind of get hip to this right now because we're going to we're going to be silly on the language here.
It's exposure therapy.
It's wild. Well, I want to say thank you for spending time with us today and having this conversation. I have a couple things before we go. One is I'd like to know, for everybody listening, where they can find you and how they can support you.
Just search Blown for Good. We have a website, blownforgood.com. That's where you can get books or you can get Hail Xenu, all that kind of stuff. And then we have, we're on X, Blown for Good. We're on YouTube, Blown for Good, Exposing Scientology. I think we're on everything now. There's TikToks and X and YouTube. And I think we might even have a Twitch account for some reason. Oh. But yeah, we've got all kinds of nonsense happening on social media. And then if you do want to help the Aftermath Foundation, you can go to theaftermathfoundation.org. You can sign up as just a volunteer. Like when Catherine got out, the Catherine Olson got out, the woman that we were talking about that used to be in the C organization and contacted us. She needed a ride to the airport. And we went to the volunteer database and she gave somebody a ride to the airport. And like we said, hey, even if it's just taking somebody to the airport and somebody signed up, I can take somebody to the airport. And there they were. They got to take somebody to the airport. So it's kind of, we're crowdsourcing helping people escape, which is it's kind of a wild concept if you think about it, like crowdsourcing escapees, like to be able to facilitate them escaping a cult. And so we have a database and we're getting more over the years. We're getting in the just since December, the amount of resources and the amount of people that have reached out that they want to volunteer or they want to donate, it's just gone through the roof. So we're getting a database system installed so we can kind of keep track of where everybody's at that needs help and people that have reached out for help to check up on, hey, how's it going? And so there's a lot of stuff that we're now doing now that we've gotten a little bit more time and we've got more people working for the foundation besides just the board members. So this whole time, it's really just been the board members that have been doing all the work. And now the board members are really starting to become a board. And now we're having people do the actual handling the emails and creating the database and doing the website. And so we're finally getting some traction and things are picking up. So
that's awesome. I know how hard it is to do advocacy and activism in our field. And I mean, this, the stuff that you talk about with the Aftermath Foundation, it's like a pipe dream. Like I would love for there to be sort of like an anti-MLM thing the same, to be able to help people out, maybe not drive people to the airport, but like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Help people out with resources or whatever they need.
When you're in the Sea Org, that ride to the airport, that is the first step of the rest of your entire life.
Yeah.
Just getting away.
Gosh, I've heard so many stories of people just getting in the car and just getting out of the, off the base.
Well, sure. Like if you don't get the ride at that time, you may never leave.
Yeah. Right. They might smoke you out. But yeah, it is a lot of work. Yeah, that's the other thing that I feel like, the thing that you were talking about earlier with the MLM, even when you're talking about that and you're talking about the control and the this and the that, I guarantee you there's a Scientologist who was in an MLM and then is watching your channel. They got burned by the MLM and then they're watching your channel and they're like, that's what they're doing to me over in Scientologyville, you know? And I guarantee you, you might even have people who've watched on your channel that were in an MLM and they were like, oh no, she's anti-Scientology. I got to do. So it goes both ways.
Right.
But at the same time, there's a little brainworm when you started talking, because they were listening to you and they were believing you and they were like, oh yeah, she knows what she's talking about. And now you're talking about Scientology and they go like, it breaks their programming because they're like, no, that person knows the score. They know what time it is. And now they're, and it just that little brainworm. And then they go back to your channel and then they watch another video and they're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Sure sounds like what I'm dealing with. So
plant the seed.
Even though there's a lot of hate sport on the internet and social media, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't outweigh the good. To me, it's like, if you have to put up with hate sport to do good, it's sort of like, okay. I mean,
I wish we didn't have to, but I will.
No, if I get to say what I want to say, why don't they get to say what they want to say? It's so I'm like, yeah. Okay. So then to me, it just becomes who can do their job better.
Right. Everything is content.
You know, so to me, I'm just kind of like, it's not the funnest thing to have to deal with, but it's sort of like, okay, if you're not hated by somebody, you ain't doing anything. That's really where it's at. Okay. Seriously, I'm being 100% seriously. If you're not...
I completely agree with you. It's an amazing, excellent point.
Yeah, if you don't have haters, you might not be doing anything that's worth hating. I don't know. You know, it's weird.
You're not making enough waves if nobody is pushing back and saying,
Yeah.
If you're not knocking on anybody's cognitive dissonance door, like, hello, Avon calling.
I used to say, if you got a hate site, you're doing it right. That was my thing because I was trying to recruit people and they were like, well, am I going to end up with getting a hate site? And I'm like, probably.
Hopefully.
That's how it works in this game.
That's like a rank up.
I didn't really know how true that was until the Aftermath series came out. Every single person that was on the Aftermath show got a hate site. Every single one.
So that was effective.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, do you think Scientology's watching?
Like, that's how I look at these things. You know, I see chatter about Apostate Alex and what he's doing over in the UK in regards to talking to his MP and getting involved in the government. You know, why is this endorsement, so to speak, of Scientology happening in East Grinstead or whatever? I don't know all the details. We're going to talk to Alex and we're going to get all of the lowdown and everything. But I only found out that it was actually like, I wasn't paying attention to these videos. I've been off in my own world. And then I heard that Scientology was like really trying to silence Alex. And I was like, oh, so he's doing something important.
Totally. And literally when they get burned, and that is another thing. It's either an L. Ron Hubbard policy or it's an Office of Special Affairs, some kind of issue or something. But it says always even the score. Always. That is another key thing. And it's funny when people get involved with this and then there's drama and there's nonsense and there's craziness and they got a private investigator following them and they're like, what the hell? And it's like, haven't you been watching? Like, you spoke out. So, and that's again where I'm like, don't be naive that there's not going to be drama. There's going to be drama. As long as we're doing this with Scientology, there's going to be drama. And you're going to get involved in it. If you want to embrace the drama, okay. But I've been doing this since 2006. There's never not been drama. There's been, like, even the thing with the birthday party. You go, these people are my friends. Nah, they're spying. They're not. So it's always like, oh, this person was your friend. Okay, until they weren't. That's how this game is played. So, and maybe Scientology prepped me for that because they are cold, hard bitches over there. And, you know, that's how they play it. But if you know the rules of the game and you're willing to play, then can't really complain that there's drama. I mean, even sometimes I'm like, what the hell with all the drama? And then people are like, eh. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you're right.
It's part of it. I mean, I talk to other content creators in the Scientology space, in the cult space, in the evangelical space, in the anti-MLM space. Every single one of those spaces has drama. Every single one of them.
Yeah.
And I always go, oh, thank God it's not just us. And we laugh. And I go, oh, it's not insular. It's not just here. It's part of it.
Totally. I was watching a comedian's podcast the other day and the comments just said, hate. From Pennsylvania. That's all it said was hate from Pennsylvania. And I was like, America. Awesome. Okay, good. And the guy's hilarious and he's a comedian. He's joking about all this stuff. And he had just done a video about this woman on TikTok or Instagram who's like, she makes coffee and she's the happiest as can be. And she has posts that the most vile, hateful possible comments in her Instagram have 5,000 likes or 47,000 likes, just hate from Wisconsin, 2,000 likes, you know, and then he does a video a week later and those are the comments in his thing. So I'm like, yeah, hate sport is alive and well. If you're going to be on the internet, it's just part of, you know, we give this wonderful tool to expose Scientology and MLMs and all this other stuff. It's not going to be like all roses and rainbows, folks.
Yeah. Rage baiting is 100% a thing.
Absolutely. And Roberta, you're not going to be surprised at all by what I'm about to say, but everyone who is interested in speaking out about anything or participating in any social media whatsoever for any reason should read The Chaos Machine by Max Fisher.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we say it all the time, but
just give yourself a little primer of how the algorithm feeds into the rage bait and vice versa, because it will Like, you may know it's happening, but you may not know how intentional and systemic it is. Well,
also, to be fair,
yeah, it's wild.
You say, well, why does the form or platform or the site or whatever it is you're on, why don't they stop that? Well, the more time you're on their site, the more money they're making. So if you get ramped up in drama and you end up staying in the drama land, the longer you stay, the more money that platform makes. So they're not going to, and especially on YouTube, even in, like I said, the comedians, or I watch a lot of comedian podcasts and stuff like that. They always have sort of a thread of something going on amongst all the, that world, that comedy YouTube world. There's always a thread of, oh, this is who we're supposed to hate right now. And this is who did this. And this is the dumb guy. This is the comedian who's never said a funny thing in his entire, it's always some of these things. And, oh, this guy messed over this guy. And this guy's not friends with it. When you watch that, and then you're over on this and you're like, oh, wow. Kind of the Scientology YouTube community sort of just kind of came to be over the past, you know, 3 or 4 years. There've been Scientology whistleblowers on the YouTube since it started, but what they were getting, you know, whatever. And in the last year or two, it's gone insane. And because I told you Scientology has been putting all these ads and Danny Masterson, and it was sort of like a perfect storm for this, but in just a year or two, it's got all the threads and drama and good guys and bad guys of a comedian kind of YouTube group that's been around for 20 years. So you go like, oh, this is an organic thing that happens, whether you want it to or not. It's sort of part of the deal.
It's kind of like the lunch tables, you know, in high school, the different cliques. Yeah. And it's like really interesting to see that naturally kind of happen among a group of people who largely didn't go to high school.
I was just going to say that. We never got to go. We never had that. Most Scientologists never had a middle school, high school, college experience. And they're kind of coming into the real world. This is a real thing. We joke, but when I joined the Sea Org, I was 15 years old. There were no parents. That's where the rest of my life until 32, that's where it all happened. So I never went to prom. I never, you know, there was no bullies and good guys. And that was in the Sea Org we did that. And that's the way the entire Sea Org is run. The Sea Org, this is a crazy thing. Not a lot of people know this. The Sea Org is mainly run by 16 to 25 year old females. They run all of Scientology.
That's how Hubbard set it up.
Yeah. It's Commodore's messenger organization is majorly comprised of young women, and they run all of the continents of Scientology. They run Los Angeles. They run, and David Miscavige is their guy, and he gives them the orders. Even at the international headquarters, the hot shot interrogators, there was three of them, and none of them were over 18. There was three girls at the international base that they were the ones that the Mark Yeagers and the David Miscavige's and the the people that worked for David Miscavige that he won interrogated. These little girls would security check these people. I mean, there was a girl named Laura Dolan. She spent hundreds of hours interrogating me. And I don't even think she was over 20 when I left. Maybe early 20s by the time I left in 2005. So it is high school. It is drama. It is all of those things. But that person, they're not giving you a swirly. They're going to send you to the rehabilitation project force for 5 years because you were snarky to them, or you made out with a girl you weren't supposed to make out with, or, you know, whatever. You could go and some teenager was deciding your fate. So the things that happen on YouTube, I don't think 15 years of YouTube would add up to one day of nonsense at the Ant Base. So to me, it's sort of like, I know people, they get hurt feelings and they, oh, he didn't do this or he said that. And I'm sort of like, oh, you have no clue. I mean, I've been through the ringer. If you've got David Miscavige yelling at you in your ear while you're trying to get something done, and if you mess up, you're going to go to a rehabilitation program camp for 10 years, sometimes the comments on YouTube don't add up to that. So it's sort of like, it is what it is. Wow.
Well, one thing before I get to my rapid fire questions is a little birdie literally just told me that you were audited by Tom Cruise.
Yeah, that's true.
How did that go?
That seems significant to you and your viewers?
No, it's just interesting. I haven't read your book, but it's just an interesting thing. I didn't know Tom Cruise did sec checks and audits and things.
Well, when you become a Scientologist, you're expected to get counseling. That's one side of the bridge to total freedom.
Right.
And on the other side of the bridge is training. So you learn how to be a counselor. And at certain levels of counseling, you cannot go further unless you do the training. Because they want you to know how the brainwashing works so well, because they're sort of relying on you to brainwash yourself for a lot of this. That's the genius of Scientology, is that they don't want to do a lot of heavy lifting. They're going to kind of get you into the groove, and then you're going to autopilot this brainwashing for the next 20 or 30 years.
Yeah. So insidious.
Well, that's just so interesting that it was Tom Cruise, because you wouldn't expect that a celebrity like that would have to do those things. But well, here it is. It's a Scientology thing. It doesn't matter who you are.
That's right.
You need to know the material inside and out. You need to be audited and also audit to understand how the process works and understand how everything goes. That this is the way it is.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I would have never thought that in a million years that Tom Cruise would have ever done that.
Yeah, they didn't really. I have to say this, full disclosure. Tom Cruise is an anomaly, because he could have just said, screw you, I'm not doing that. He could have done that.
Right. And what would they say? Oh, okay, that's fine, Tom.
That's what John Travolta did. John Travolta didn't do any of that nonsense.
Oh, so John Travolta's never done an audit.
Kirstie Alley did.
Wow.
And John Travolta might have done a bit when he was first in. But Tom Cruise was like, I want to be. I mean, say whatever you want to say about the guy. He is a fanatic at whatever he does.
He's all in.
He's all in. If he's going to do we're going to do a movie and I'm supposed to jump out of a plane, gosh darn it, I'm jumping out of that plane. And if I need to run a bunch of places really fast, I'm going to do that too throughout the most of the movie, at least once or twice or 27 times. When he was a Scientologist, he's like, I really want to do this. And I really want to be the best Scientologist there was. So he didn't have to do that, but they did stack the deck for him. Because when you audit somebody in Scientology, it's sort of like, it's like the Boy Scouts, if you want to, I don't know any other kind of analogy, but if you're the Cub Scout leader and that kid ends up being a career criminal, then you were a shitty Cub leader or whatever they call it, okay? Like, this person's future is attached to you because you're sort of molding them and doing something with them that is, if they fail in life, then you failed. And if they succeed, then you succeeded. So they needed to get somebody who hadn't had any Scientology counseling or training. And that was me, because I was a worker. I got there when I was 15. I was working. I was making cassettes and making DVDs and VHS. I was working. I wasn't trying to figure out where the space aliens were. I was just there to get a job done. And I didn't. And I, to be fair, I couldn't live with my mom. My dad moved out of state. I was tired of paying for school, food, rent, figuring out how I'm going to get to school and work and everything else when I was 15. So I was like, that's it. I'm tapping out. And I joined the C organization because they're going to give me food and room. And everybody in my whole life wants me to do this. So I'm going to go do it. But I had no desire to really get superpowers from these folks. I was just like, whatever. This is where I ended up. I'm here. So when I got to the international headquarters, they needed two people at the international headquarters that Tom Cruise could audit. And that place is for seasoned Sea Org members. That's where you get there because you've been around for 20 years, not because you're some green weenie from Los Angeles, but also because I grew up in Scientology in schools. I didn't rob anybody or steal or do whatever you that disqualifies, do drugs, have $40,000 in debt. I didn't have any of the things that a recruit that somebody's trying to get into the Sea Org member would normally have. So it was sort of like the perfect storm that I went to this place. But then when I got there, they said, we need somebody to Tom Cruise to audit. We need somebody who just has never done anything in Scientology. And I was the closest person to that.
You were the audit ringer for Tom Cruise.
Yeah. And then also I'm just a blank slate. So if I get screwed up, there's probably a chance, and I'm young, there's probably a chance we can fix it. It's not going to go that bad. Spoiler alert.
It won't go on Tom Cruise's permanent record.
But the crazy thing is that if you audit somebody and they have an accident, you get in trouble as the auditor. If you audit somebody and they turn into a suppressive person, that's basically the ultimate diss of your Scientology abilities. You're such a shitty Scientology counselor that you created a suppressive person. So it's kind of a weird, now it's weird for me that I was his.
You're like the most suppressive person too.
No, I'm not. I'm like SP level 15 last time I checked.
SP 15.
Oh yeah. Well, let me check the leaderboard.
But so they have this thing where the auditor is the bad guy if something goes wrong. And there have been plenty of people that escaped, like that were being interrogated. Like I told you, these girls that would interrogate us, if they were interrogating somebody and that person escaped, big trouble. Because obviously they had crimes that you didn't get out of them. And then those crimes led to them needing to escape so that their crimes wouldn't be found out.
Obviously.
So it's kind of a weird thing that it was weird for me to be his pre-clear. That's what they call somebody that you're counseling. Someone who's not yet clear is a pre-clear. It was weird for me at the time. It must be weird now that I'm doing videos. I've done so many videos about Tom Cruise. When Tom Cruise has a movie coming out, Dan Straight Skippy, we're going to tell some Tom Cruise Scientology stories on YouTube.
We're going to put him on the thumbnail all over it. Yes, we are.
Yeah. If I'm talking about Tom Cruise, you're going in the thumbnail. That's how it is. That's just, there's no way around. You or Dave, or maybe you and Dave, if I'm lucky and I get a really good shoot from the Discord, the SPTV Discord. But regardless, Tom Cruise is responsible for one of the people that have been exposing Scientology. He was the person who audited that person. So sucks to suck.
I just, for me, it's hilarious.
He's gotten more people out than he has gotten in.
Well, because Scientology can't be at fault for anything. So like, this is just another way of placing blame. Like, it's not the teachings. It's not the technology. Like, that's solid.
Yeah.
It must have been Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise fucked up somewhere.
Yeah. And the person who picked me to be his counselor was Marty Rathbun. When they wanted me to be audited by Tom Cruise, I didn't want to get any auditing. I wanted to do this course because I needed to be able to drive. And in order to drive in the Sea Organization, you have to do a course called Car School.
I forgot about Car School from your book.
And I had a driver's license since I was
Car School.
I had a driver's license since I was 14 years old. I know how to drive a car. I don't need to do car school. I've driven all over the country. And I'm 16 years old now. And I want to drive a car again. And I want to buy a car. I want to somehow be able to drive a car. I like driving. You got to do car school.
Is that the best name they could come up with? Car school?
No, L. Ron Hubbard came up with car school. This is a whole Hubbard thing to do car school. Every time you drive a vehicle, if you drive a vehicle for an hour, like if I get a car from Motor Pool and I drive to the grocery store and pick up some sand for a shoot we're shooting, we produce movies there, and I come back to the property, I have to wash that car. And if 10 more people check that car out that day, they all have to wash that car when they get back. Because L. Ron Hubbard said, when you take out a car, when you bring it back, you got to wash it. And it's like, but you washed it. A guy was washing it when I picked it up an hour ago. I know the car is clean. I just drove for an hour. Nope. L. Ron Hubbard said, you got to wash it.
L. Ron Hubbard would be so disappointed in me.
Right. L. Ron Hubbard's like, that red Nissan's been out 6 times today and it's only been washed 5. Somebody's going to the RPF.
Oh, yay, it's raining. My car's getting washed. Like, that's me. So
we had to wash it even if it rained. If it was raining, we had to wash it. While it was raining, we had to wash it.
Shut up.
It didn't even matter that it was still raining. I'm not making this up. If L. Ron Hubbard says you got to wash the car when you get back, you got to wash the car when you get back.
Yeah.
Okay. So I wanted to do car school. And they were like, we really want you to get some counseling. And I'm like, I don't think so. I want to get, I got other things planned. And so they did this interview with me and they were like, we were looking that you haven't had any of this kind of counseling or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And the interview is happening on the e-meter. And the fact that I want to do car school, the e-meter saying, that is what I want to do. I wants to do car school and I don't want to get auditing. And somebody just came into the meeting. I think it was Marty. Marty Rathbun just came into the interview and he said, let's take a break. And he came outside. He says, we need somebody for Tom Cruise to audit. And you're the only person that we've come up with who hasn't done the counseling that he needs to do. And I was like, oh, why don't you just say that? Why don't you try to like lead me all over the place? Like try to get me to organically say that I want to do this because I don't want to do it.
So did you have to go back and try and trick the e-meter?
No. Whenever I would go in session and I wanted the session to be over, I would think about, I went to a concert, the Rose Bowl. It was a Depeche Mode concert. I was front row center. It was a spiritual experience for me. And so whenever I wanted the e-meter to like be good, I would just think about being front row at that concert and I would get little goosebumps and the e-meter would go wild. They would be like, I don't know what's going on over there, but you're doing good. And so whenever I was getting interrogated by those girls, people, you know, just like, just thinking about the front row, you know, just thinking about that. And all those interrogations went my way. So I did the same thing with Tom. And one time when Tom was auditing me, I fell asleep. And if you're a counselor, if somebody falls asleep while you're counseling them, that's like, you have to have the personality of Herman Munster to put somebody asleep while you're counseling them. And Tom Cruise put me to sleep.
I feel like it checks out.
Instead of him getting in trouble, I got in trouble. Yeah. And all of this is in my book, Blown for Good, Behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology. All the Tom Cruise stories.
I can't wait to read it. Oh my God. I love all of these stories. I think they're absolutely hilarious. And like I said, I wanted to thank you again for being so candid and open about sharing these things. At the end of these podcast episodes that I do, I have something I call rapid fire questions. They're not rapid at all. And you can take as little or as much time as you would like.
I'll be short because I've been yapping for 2.5 hours already.
All right. These are Scientology, but there is an MLM one in there. So you might have to think a little bit. Okay. All right, Mark. And this is great because since Claire's not here, when she comes back to talk about her book, she can do her own rapid fires then.
Perfect. So we'll see. We'll compare notes.
Give me one word that encompasses how you feel about Scientology.
Scam.
Give me a piece of advice, and you can use as many words as you'd like, to somebody who is thinking about joining the Church of Scientology.
If you value your family, your relationships, and your well-being, please do a lot of research before you decide to do that, because it is, as somebody who spent 32 years, give or take, it didn't work out well. And I know thousands of people that it also didn't work out for. And there's more ex-Scientologists than there are active current Scientologists. That should really tell you all you need to know.
Yeah. Okay, here's the MLM one. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. In your opinion and experience, what is the worst MLM?
Oof.
They didn't even know Beachbody was an MLM.
Yeah, I'm not. I knew about the LuLaRoe thing. I watched that. I knew about that.
I know Mark has a deep, dark MLM from his past. That's usually what most people say.
Yeah. Well, when I was a kid and I was in Scientology, when I moved out of living with my mom, I lived with my best friend and his name was Jesse Radstrom. His dad's name was Ron Radstrom. He was going nutso over Amway, and we had Amway protein bars. We had Amway soap. We had Amway dish detergent. This guy was also a baller. My friend's dad had a business that made cable boxes for cable companies. So back in the 80s, if you wanted cable TV, his box was likely the one you were going to get. And the competitor company, he owned that one as well. So the two biggest cable box manufacturers in California, this one guy owned, and he was printing money. And so when he got into Amway, it was the weirdest thing because he was already a baller. He had tons and tons of money, like millions and millions of dollars. And he had given a ton of it to Scientology, and he was buying every possible Amway thing that there was. If Amway made it, we were using it. We were eating it and we were washing our bodies with it. It was a ridiculous thing. And to me, we were going to these Amway meetings and they were passing out cassettes and, you know, Newt Fligenring, the Scientology dentist was doing it. And it was a whole bunch of Scientology people in Amway.
No.
And to me, it was like the Twilight Zone within the Twilight Zone, because this is the craziest thing. And I'll tell you, this is why it really resonated with me. Scientology, they slay at MLM because they know how to convince people to do crazy shit. So it's just like you just got somebody to spend $100,000 to find out about space aliens. You think I'm not going to be able to get 10 G's out of this guy? I can get 10 G's out of this guy all day long.
Everybody uses soap.
Yeah, it's soap. What's the problem? You know,
I guess that there's a growing Scientology team in Monate now. So
no,
really,
that'd be interesting to look at.
Alien shampoo, huh?
Might be a conspiracy theory. Don't trust anything I say.
Scientology were really big into like Amazon arbitrage stuff too for a while. Like they rule that sort of space.
Wow.
If you can convince somebody to get into Scientology, convincing somebody to buy some Beachbody, Shakeology, or whatever you want to call it, that is a very, very low bar to reach. So, and my friend's dad, he was a baller. He was getting people in. And because you're a baller and you have money, people that don't have money and that want to be a baller, they listen to you. And that's how Scientology works. It's a club. It's a secret fruity club. And the people who have the most money are the most popular people in the club. And if you want to make money like them, you got to give some money to make some money, and you got to play. And it's, I'm telling you. So I'm going to say Amway or Fish Star or whatever they call themselves online.
I like fish star too.
I knew it wasn't starfish, so I figured it could only be fish star. I know it's something, some star.
It's something stupid. Yeah.
It was the only possibility.
Anyway, but I don't even know, is Amway still a thing?
Oh yeah, still, yes. The number, yeah. One MLM, still the, I call it the grandfather.
Still the granddaddy.
Oh, it's number one?
Number one.
It's still the worst, yeah.
Oh.
Number one MLM of all time.
What are the chances I picked the number one? What are the chances?
You watch the trends and you just know.
I was
pretty high, actually.
I was 12, so I wasn't really driving that car.
Mark, what's the hardest lesson that you learned while you were in Scientology?
Wow, that's deep, deep, deep undercover right there. Okay, even if they are your family and you think you have unconditional love, there is no such thing as unconditional love in Scientology.
Wow.
And it doesn't matter what history, it doesn't matter what ties, it doesn't matter anything, it doesn't matter blood, mom, brother, sister. None of that matters when there's a cult involved. If they cut you loose, they cut you loose, and you have to figure that out. I mean, there's no logical way to try to process that. I don't think there's a lot. To me, I don't think there's a logical way to process that. Your family just says, you're done. Just all of them. That's kind of crazy. I haven't spoken to my sister since 2005 because the day I left, I was a suppressive person. You can never speak to her ever again.
That's so heartbreaking. And then let's end it on a positive and give me a positive takeaway from your time in Scientology.
Positive is I was working 100 hours a week for 15 years and I was slaying it. So now, I only work 80 hours a week. Who got the last laugh?
Suck on that.
I'm only working 80 hours a week and not 100.
That's right. And also, I have fun doing it.
That's what matters.
Yeah, no. Scientology did really set me up for failure when I was there, but it set me up for success after I escaped, because I've been through quite a bit of things that I wouldn't wish on anybody. And I went through that for 15 years. And so getting things done and working and all that stuff, that is sort of like a no-brainer. My biggest challenge is just having fun along the way and forcing myself not to work 8 hours a week or, you know, whatever. I don't work 8 hours a week. Don't let anybody tell you that. But I do work a lot, but I don't work nearly as much as I was working. And also I was doing nothing for anybody by working there. And now I feel like what I do in my professional life and what I do in my spare time with Scientology nonsense, I feel like it's worth doing. I feel like it's adding to and not subtracting from.
Yeah, I love it. And I love that your answers are so similar to the victims of MLM and the things that they say, the positive and the negatives of getting out. There's so many similarities, and I hope everybody are listening to these Scientology episodes and going, oh my God, I'm connecting my own personal experiences in other high demand control to this and understanding that it's all the same.
Totally.
Just a different day, different name, different place.
Same shit, different toilet. The thing I... Yeah, that's it. That we should just end right there, because that's, I mean, I'm not going to top that, basically. Well,
thank you so much, Mark. This has been just a pure joy. And thank you to Michelle for joining and hanging out. You. Now Michelle knows how the magic is made.
Totally. And also, this to me is how the content should be. This to me is how people resonate. This to me is productive. When I say add to and not subtract, if 5,000 people hear this and one of those people goes, yep, they're right, then we did our job today. Yeah. And also, we had a fun time doing it. I think I did. I had a good time.
I had a great time.
I completely agree. Yeah.
I think that's what we're trying to do with our channel, and that's what we're trying to do with what we're doing in our space. So we really appreciate you guys having us on. And also the fact that, you know, there's other people out there that we can talk to about something that is maybe not the same thing, but it's enough similar that we can go like, oh yeah, I can learn from you. You maybe be able to learn from me. And that is the only thing I think you can get a house and you can get a boat, and the only thing that you keep, no matter what happens, is your experiences and your conversations. That's the only thing you get to keep for yourself, no matter what happens in life. So if you can make those valuable and worthwhile, then that's sort of like a bonus.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to Life After MLM. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. And follow us on social media at Life After MLM Podcast, or visit our website at lifeaftermlmpod.com. And don't forget to check out our Patreon for exclusive content and join the community on Discord. You can find all of the links to follow in our show notes. Life After MLM is produced by Roberta Blevins. Audio editing is done by the lovely Kayla Craven. Video editing by the indescribable RK Gold. And Michelle Carpenter is our triple emerald princess of robots. If you have a story about a cult, fraud, scam, or MLM and want to be on the show, please hit us up. We would love to help you tell your story and start your healing journey in life after MLM. See you next time, Hunts.